Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
Well, welcome to again another edition of the Hubbub Podcast. It's already October 2021.
Wow. How did we get here so fast?
I don't know. I've heard that a lot. People think time is just going faster. I don't know what it is. It's, we're busier or what?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's hard to believe we're on episode 28 of the Hubbub Podcast. And, you know, we appreciate everybody who's been listening in, watching us. So
yes,
I'm excited for this. And not to mention, I'm here with my lovely co-host, Mr. Sean Brown.
I guess I can accept that. Thank you, Donnie Harkle.
You're welcome.
All right. So our topic this month really centered around primarily means of egress and emergency escape windows. Why are we going to talk about that? Well, you know, the primary reason that someone may need to escape in the event of emergency is if there's a fire in their home. So that's really important. And the primary way to do that, especially if, you know, night somebody's sleeping, it's through windows or other means that might be available. But primarily that, you know, direct access is going to be a window. So it's really a good topic for us to discuss this month, because it's so important. It's why we do what we do. The nature of what we do for the community is safety, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and I may sound like a broken record because, you know, I bring this up every time we do one of these safety podcasts, but that is, you know, the core of what we do every day and why we do it. So it's a very important topic.
Absolutely. So our podcast today is going to discuss a number of things centered around fire safety, because when we think about why codes are created, and they're constantly changing, and sometimes that's difficult for people, especially in the building industry, trying to keep up with code changes, and there have been many over the years. But the reason codes are created is because something has happened, usually detrimentally, that's caused a loss of life or harm to health or some things. And so they look at it, and they create codes to try to prevent those things. And really with the topic today, there are a couple things to keep in mind, and we're going to talk about them today. But when it comes to serious accidents, and nobody ever wants to experience a loss and death, you know, with a loved one or even themselves, you know, there are a lot of things a person can do to prevent these things in the first place, following manufacturer's instructions when it comes to how to use products and just being safe in the home. But at the very least, things that we can do just to be safe. So if something happens catastrophically, such as a fire, what are some things that we can do for our families to help get out of the situation and lives can be saved? So, yeah, we chose this topic specifically to talk about this month because this month is Fire Prevention Month, the month of October. So that's our role today, just to help educate in that respect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when we think about fire prevention, it's something that's been around for a long time. Because you can go back many, many years when, you know, because of how society has grown and nationally, you know, there's just been so many communities. And then because of that, you had this danger of fire and threat. So early on in this century, there were many catastrophic events that said, hey, we need to create a code to be able to address these things to protect life. So since about 1922, the NFPA, the National Fire Protection Agency, they've sponsored this public observance of Fire Prevention Week. And in fact, in 1925, President Calvin Coolidge proclaimed Fire Prevention Week a national observance, making it the longest-running public health observance in our country. So early on, you know, they saw the importance of just recognizing and acknowledging these things. And during Fire Prevention Week, children, adults, teachers, they learn how to stay safe in case of a fire. I know when my boys were in school, I don't know what it is now, but they actually had drills. In fact, the firefighters, they would bring out this kind of mock home, and the kids would go in there, and they would kind of do simulate a fire and teach the kids how to actually escape.
Yeah, I remember going through something similar when I was in school.
Yeah, I think when I was in school, they really didn't care because I didn't do anything like that. But anyway, yeah, so, you know, firefighters and everybody really recognizes the value of life-saving public education to, you know, reduce the casualties that result from fires. And so that's why Fire Prevention Week is observed each year during the week of October 9th in commemoration of what? The Great Chicago Fire.
Remember, we talked about that on another podcast.
We may have.
I think so, yeah.
Well, that's why you should listen to our podcast, right, Don?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so this Great Chicago Fire happened October 8th, 1871, and it caused devastating damage. So we can imagine why something like this would cause people to stop and think about, hey, what can we do to protect life in the event of a fire? Because this fire, this one situation, killed more than 250 people. It left 100,000 people homeless. It destroyed more than 17,400 structures and burned more than 2,000 acres of land. So, pretty catastrophic event that really did a lot of damage and took a lot of life. And so this year's theme was Learn the Sounds of Fire Safety for Fire Protection Month. And again, just centered around how to educate everyone about the different sounds smoke and carbon monoxide alarms make. And when you hear those sounds, and because if you hear the sound for the first time when something catastrophic has happened, especially with children, they may not recognize what it means. Mm-hmm. So it's become really important to be familiar with those audible sounds and what they mean. And only by doing that is the family going to be able to really stay safe.
Yeah, they put out a great message this year. If you go follow us on our social media pages, you can search for PCAD Hagerstown on Facebook or Instagram. We posted some of the items that the NFPA put out regarding the sounds of fire safety. So there's some really good tips out there that you may not have known about before, and just things to look for to stay safe in your home. So as we move on, you know what we like to do a lot of times with these topics is to give a little bit of history surrounding them. You know, why did do these codes exist? Where did it come from? You know, what's the background on some of this stuff? So in the 1700s, the best that building occupants could do in the event of a fire was to actually shout for the firemen. And they would end up bringing a fire escape, which was essentially a cart with a ladder on it. So shouting for firemen, not very effective. I'm glad we don't rely on that method anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, especially if you had laryngitis.
I can't imagine. And by about 1860, New York began to require means of egress in apartment buildings. And property owners, they often went with the least expensive option, which was a rope. So here's your rope. Good luck getting down. Another patent proposed individual parachute hat. But this was also accompanied by rubber shoes to break the fall. So you got your parachute hat and rubber shoes on. Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, I could see the rubber shoes would be okay, yeah.
It was, I don't know. I'm not trying to test it out either. And there were also fire escape slides. These were marketed towards schools as both emergency devices and playground equipment. I think it'd be very important to make sure you know the difference of when to use these. But yeah, it's very interesting. Like I said, we'll have a picture of that, of a schoolhouse with one of those slides on it. And then in March 25th of 1911, a fire broke out in the Ash Building, and it spread quickly. Workers on the 10th floor were able to survive by taking the stairs up through a fire exit to the roof. Workers on the 8th floor were, by and large, they were able to get out by taking the stairs down. But workers on the 9th floor were trapped. Only a few people on the 9th floor actually knew about the 10th floor exit, and most didn't know to actually go upstairs. A number of the workers tried to use the outside fire escape, but it collapsed under their weight. 146 people died in this fire. Unfortunately, it's tragedies like this, that create these building codes, as Sean mentioned earlier. The building was a fireproof structure, which is why at the time, no one really thought it needed egress. Popular logic at the time was that if a building was first class and non-combustible, the occupants could be safely locked inside, which is just crazy to think about at this point, you know. And after the Triangle Fire, the NFPA started collecting data and studying effective egress. So those are some examples of items in history that led us to where we're at now. And The one part, though, it still stays true today. You need to know where your fire exits are. You know, as those people, they just didn't know, and that ultimately led to a lot of their deaths.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so interesting how things were looked at as okay years ago,
right.
And we think today, wow. But it's kind of similar today, even, really.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, people sometimes look at codes today and think they're ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
That's with anything, though, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's, I know we run into it a lot with parenting, you know, it's these new guidelines are brought out for a reason, you know, mm-hmm. but you got people, well, back in my day, we did this and they were fine. But so many studies have shown, as I just said, with NFPA doing their studies on effective egress, there's a reason for these newer codes.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, as it does with any locality, they'll take these codes and make them more or less applicable to our localities. Because as we've discussed in previous podcasts, every community is different in what its needs are. Hagerstown, as an example, has unique needs, similar to many other communities, but nonetheless, you know, we've got a lot of older buildings, multi-story buildings, both commercial and residential. So it's, you know, these types of codes have been around for years, even in the city of Hagerstown. And it's interesting, the earliest code book, just to provide a little history on Hagerstown, the earliest code book we have on file in our office is the official building code of the city of Hagerstown, Maryland, 1927 edition. And it has a section just totally devoted to means of egress. And it's, you know, we recognize that it could have existed before, but the publications we have only go back to 1927. And Donnie talked a little bit earlier about, you know, older forms of fire escapes, some of those that were a little bit funny earlier. But nonetheless, some of those things are still addressed in the city of Hagerstown because they're needed. Because, again, it's unfortunate that so many tragedies occur because if the right standards were put in place at the time, more lives could have been saved. So thus, that's why we again see better codes created and updated. I might add that these codes are not just implemented without really doing any research, but you know, if a code is thought to help improve, they're going to put it through a lot of testing, so to speak, to make sure it's going to really improve life and really make a difference. So lots goes into making sure a code's going to work before it's actually adopted and implemented. You know, this is interesting stuff to some of us who are in the business, so that's why we don't bore our listeners with a lot. We kind of give you what we think you'll find interesting and kind of help put the pieces together. But, you know, it's good information. And there's a lot of good things to think about. In fact, a lot of times there are questions that come up in people when we think about codes. One of the main questions we get asked for residential properties, and mostly for this discussion, is when is a second means of egress required? Well, what our code stipulates is that a unit that is located above the second floor or a third floor and above unit requires two means of egress. So that's kind of a basic requirement. I just had that last week. In fact, yeah, I had a rental inspection and the stairs were deteriorated on the second floor. And so, you know, we had to address that. So
that's a very good question, you know, and a lot of people then wonder, well, how, you know, what is the most common way of obtaining, you know, two independent exits in that situation? Constructing a means of egress on the exterior of the structure is easier when there is land around the structure. Here in Hagerstown, this is the most common way because most of the structures with third floor and above apartment units were not originally constructed with a third floor unit. If they were, they have an existing second means of egress because this has been in Hagerstown's code for approximately 100 years. So it's been around a bit. The other way is two independent exits on the interior of the structure. This is more common when constructing a means of egress on when the exterior is not practical due to geographic restrictions. The number of exits or means of egress can increase depending on the size of the structure, number of occupants on the floor, or the number of floors in the structure. And you know, as we always say, please consult with your local jurisdiction to determine the number of exits or means of egress required. for your project or structure. For commercial structures, all floors are evaluated to determine the exits out of the structure. Any path from a place of business or assembly use or any other commercial use is evaluated to determine the number of exits from the space. And the one thing you should take away is the means of egress from a commercial space or structure will always be required, even if the structure is only one story. So, you know, you need a way out is the biggest thing.
Yeah, it's good to know those requirements. And in addition to those things, as we've been talking about from time to time through this podcast already, is that oftentimes what's involved in getting out of a building, if it's especially if it's multi-story, is stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And stairs. And so what maybe a lot of people don't realize is that there are specific requirements when it comes to stairs, because if the stairs themselves are unsafe or not built properly, they could be the thing that keeps a person from exiting the building. So there's code requirements for both multi-residential and commercial structures. The building code requires the means of egress to have treads that meet certain requirements. For example, they must be at least 11 inches deep, and risers, or that from distance from one step to the next, can be no higher than 7 inches. And there are to be landings when the height is more than 12 feet on risers. So again, we're talking about stairs and just egress overall. What we're really talking about, if you want to whittle it down, is the quickest way or the safest way to get from an occupied space outside to the public right away. And so people are going to do what's familiar to them. They came in a certain way, that's the tendency, mm-hmm. is to go out the way that they came. And in a case when a person's not familiar, maybe they've never been in there. You know, if you've been in your home, you know your home like the back of your hand. You can get around it with your eyes closed practically, which is good in a way. But if you, say, have visitors or the people have never been in the building, they have no idea the layout of the building. So they got to be able to have an easy, logical way to get out of the building in the event of emergency. And so stairs are usually the first place that people think about when they need to get out in the event of emergency. They are really pieces of emergency equipment. And they're often noticeable if you see buildings going up. Oftentimes you'll see, as before the building as a whole is constructed, you can see concrete block and looks like a small tower. Well, those are the fire stairways because they're fireproof. That block is rated. And so basically that area, even in the event of a fire, is to keep fire out and keep people using the stairs safe. And so those things are made up of a number of features, including self-closing doors. They can have sprinklers and even alarms. And because the fire stairs work perfectly as well as stairways, they are a means of egress in the building. And today, fire stairways have to be rated, meaning that they have to be, again, constructed in such a way that in the event of a fire, even though the rest of the building may be burning, it's going to be preserved as long as possible. So, you know, just kind of some important elements to know about when you're thinking about getting out of a building, what, you know, those stairs and those enclosures are meant to do.
Oh, that's a very good example. Cause like you said, you know, you just dealt with stairs the other day, and if the stairs are in not good working order, what's the point? You know, that could be the thing that hurts you more than the fire.
Yep.
So we talked a lot about means of egress, but now we want to move on to the other topic for the episode, and that's emergency escape windows. So the emergency escape windows don't have as long of a history in code books. In our research, the earliest that we found was about 1964 is when emergency escape windows first appeared. So what is an emergency escape window? Well, a rescue opening is sometimes what it's referred to. What it is, it's an operable window, door, or similar device that provides for a mean of escape or access for rescue in the event of an emergency. The purpose of the emergency escape window is fatal fires typically occur while people are asleep. The reasons for the increased hazard are people are often, they have delayed reactions when they're being woken up from a smoke alarm or a fire. The rooms are dark. The occupants are dressed in their bed clothes. They're just basically out of sorts. So all these circumstances reduce the reaction time of the occupants and increase the likelihood of compromising their ability to exit the building. So you want to make sure that it, you know, gives you some types of ease of access to these escape windows. And it's very true. If you ever wake up from a smoke alarm, you can be very confused. Are all structures required to have one of these windows? Every sleeping room located at or below the third story in a residential structure shall have at least one openable window or exterior door for emergency escape or two independent exits. And these requirements, they can vary depending on your jurisdiction, so please consult with them. But these emergency escape windows, though they are more recent in the code books, doesn't make them any less valuable.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So windows are just not there for pretty.
Right. Not yeah. just to look outside.
Right. Right. Yeah. They're built with safety in mind, and so when we look at our windows, we have to recognize that they serve a purpose in the case of an emergency. And that's why, again, codes there are certain code requirements when it comes to how a window is constructed, size and opening, and so forth. So, for example, new windows, they have to have a clear opening that is 5.7 square feet on the second, third, and basement sleeping room. And the clear opening for a ground level or first floor is 5 square feet. So those are important to know, especially when one's thinking about taking a room that wasn't normally used for sleeping purposes and now they want to convert it. We get that a lot in our, like a basement. Mm-hmm. They want to convert a basement into a sleeping space, an apartment, or say an attic. Well, one of the requirements is having proper egress. These size requirements. And so the minimum dimension for an escape window, as you were talking, is to have a clear opening height of 24 inches, and the minimum clear opening width is to be 20 inches. And just like the means of egress, there are other codes that go into place in determining all the requirements that must be met for emergency escape windows. This is just a brief overview. There are more requirements, like, for example, one thing is if you have a double hung window, well, it's not measuring the whole window. You have to measure the opening of the window.
Right.
So sometimes that's a mistake made because you're talking about what do you have to get through to get out.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, not necessarily the whole size of the window, but what can be opened.
Yes.
That's a very good point.
Yep.
And we get a lot of questions like that, that Sean just brought up. One of the more frequent ones we get is, can I use one of the rolled up ladders for a fire escape? While it's a valid question, our code does not permit the use of ladders as a means of egress. Although they're sold that way in the stores, there are no local codes supporting these types of ladders. I'll obviously check with your local jurisdiction to see if those are permitted, but here in Hagerstown, they are not. Another question we get is, what if I have a second floor unit that also utilizes the third floor? Does this type of unit require a second means of egress from the third floor? The answer to that one is no. A second means of egress is only required when the entire unit is on the third floor or above. You may be exempted from the second means of egress, but you must still meet the escape window requirements. Another question we often get is, I have a double hung window and both sashes pop out. Does that meet the code? No, double hung windows do not meet the definition of an emergency escape. When the window is opened with normal operations, the clear opening is to be 5.7 square feet. So as Sean just mentioned, that goes along with what he was talking about. And, that was a lot of information. Feel free to go back, rewind the episode if you missed something or have any other questions. You can reach out to us on our social media pages. You can find us at PCAD Hagerstown. Like I said, you can find those the stuff that NFPA put out for Fire Prevention Week. You can find all of our previous episodes. We are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Anchor, and pretty much every other podcast platform. You can also find us on YouTube if you want to watch us. Make sure you subscribe. So you can catch all of our future episodes. We're on episode 28 now, so you have 27 others that you can listen to and watch. So next up is Sean's favorite part of the episode. It is our weird news story. We will link to this article in the podcast description so you can watch the video for yourself. But the headline of this is Chicago cat fleeing fire. Let me start that one over. Chicago cat fleeing fire survives 5-story jump and it just walks off. So some of you all may have seen this video. I know it went viral when it did happen, but it's crazy. There's a fire at a building and bystanders were filming it and they noticed the cat just up on by one of the windows. Well, the cat eventually, they jumped. They jumped over a wall, completely missing it, and walked off like nothing happened. Like they do this every day. It was pretty impressive, and it was great that the cat and no one else was injured from this fire. But it's crazy. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. Just.
Yep. Yep. You know, even if you don't like cats, you gotta give them amazing.
Yep, that was pretty good.
So. Yeah. Well, speaking of cats and animals and so forth.
Good segue.
Yeah, gives us a clue about next month's episode. I think you'll really be interested. It's another question that we get a lot of interest in the community about, and that's when it comes to various pets and animals that are allowed in our community. We receive calls all of the time. I've had concerns, I'll say, in the past couple of weeks.
Me too.
On various forms of livestock in the city and so forth. So it's something that, you know, is prevalent. People have questions about and sometimes, understandably, don't completely understand. So
yeah, a lot of it might just be an education thing. That's why we do a lot of these podcasts, you know. Mm-hmm. Somebody, like in my case, they just moved into town and they did not know. So that's a, you know, valid reason, but we want to make sure everybody is clear on that and understands what Hagerstown permits and does not permit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So please tune in for that podcast next month and we'll have some nice discussion on that. Our musical guest.
They're pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, another really impressive group. Rudy and the Bluefish. Sounds similar to something else.
Yeah. Another can't group, really figure
yeah,
that
I can't either. Anyway. Yeah, but amazing group. I mean, I won't belabor this group, but an amazing group just because of what they all bring and where they've come from. This band, Rudy and the Bluefish, started in 1998. They're based in Maryland. A number of the musicians either in Washington County or in Hagerstown. These guys have played all over U.S. and even Europe itself. On their social media page, they describe themselves as a mix of blues, R&B, soul, funk, jazz, swing, and rock and roll from the 50s to the present.
A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything. And you can see the talent. Some of these guys have been with some well-known music in the past. A lot of these guys have come from other groups. A lot of these guys have been playing for decades. And so, you know, with all their experience, they've come together to create this group. And, man, they're really talented and very entertaining. Amazing to watch. And really cool music. I was listening to them. Had my volume turned up at home, and my wife was going, "Who is that? That is amazing." So I told them, "Oh, wow, wow." So, yeah, because she didn't know who they were or anything. So, yeah. So, of course, you can find these guys on social media, Facebook and YouTube. They even have a website with their name. So, yeah, check these guys out. I know you'll be impressed with them. They play locally from time to time and so forth. So, yeah, Rudy and the Bluefish. So we'll take out our podcast and take a listen to them.
Too much trouble. Where's the local?